Okay, folks, biosecurity, here we go. Let me introduce myself first, because I've been quiet so far, and that's going to change for the rest of the afternoon, I'm sorry to say. I want to conquer a world. Here's a world that it is I want to conquer. I come from a place called the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And the first thing I have to say is the organization doesn't have a Z in it. It's got an S. And I'm just saying this so we all remember. And this is an OECD meeting, so it's British English, and I speak British English.
You all lost the war, get over it.
Okay.
Which war? You see, works already, eh? Put a Scots one up and that's what happens. Okay, so what I want to do for a minute or two before we get into serious stuff is tell you why we're here. And it's not just to take back the good old colonies. It's to talk about some serious things. The serious things is basically one thing and one thing only. We're the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And what we want is economic development. God, we need it now more than we've needed it for such a long time. What a crisis. What a set of stimulus packages. Aren't you guys lucky with the amount of money that's being spent? So let's spend it on things that are going to matter. And the key issue for us is, how much does synthetic biology matter? So our first question for the OECD, and our reason for being involved in these discussions, is we now start to talk about biosciences and biotechnology being what many of us have always thought it probably would be, a really transformative, generic, general-purpose technology. If we can do what people like Drew Endy tells us we can do, which is to take these building blocks of biology and engineer them and synthesize them and assimilate them in a way that we've done with engineering and with ICTs, then to use a sporting metaphor, with a proper game with bats and balls, cricket, we can knock the ball for six. But well, you know, I don't know how the equivalent in rounders, but it's sort of But in order to do that, to knock the ball for six or knock it out the park or whatever it is you call it, we need to make sure that we create a really effective, really efficient, supportive ecosystem environment for innovation. And that's what the OECD is trying to do through our various working parties. And you'll have heard already in coffee and over cocktails and the like that we've got representatives from two of our intergovernmental working parties here, from the biotechnology guys and from the nanotechnology guys. And that ain't any accident when it comes to this set of discussions. But I've got five things that I worry about and synthetic biology. And I worry about them across the range of science and technology issues we deal with. First of all, how do we create the systems for the networking, the collaborative work, the convergence of technologies, and the real movement, the capturing of the benefits of globalization? And that's what these guys have all been talking about, telling us about these great advances in getting young kids involved in synthetic biology. What as governments can we do to enable that? Secondly, we believe in open innovation. We believe in open innovation because that's the way people innovate in the life sciences. Let's get real. Nobody does all their own thing any longer. We have to go for open innovation. So how do you get open innovation and maintain the return on investment? It's the open-closed debate. It worries us a lot. Thirdly, and here synthetic biology starts to get really interesting. We're interested in bringing supply and demand side together, in participative innovation, in user-driven innovation. Sure, we see a lot of this in the software industry, but are we going to start to see this in the biosciences as well? There's a real set of governance issues in there, and that's going to play into what some of the comments these guys will make. Fourthly, Paul, I don't know if you're still in the room, but are we going to innovate in a way that will meet societal expectations, whatever they will be? And again, societal expectations are probably higher now with all these billions of dollars we all our governments have spent on stimulus packages. So we better damn well make sure that the innovations that are coming out of these stimulus packages actually meet societal expectations. Will synthetic biology? And fifthly, and the purpose of this session, governance. Can we create sustainable, forward-looking, dynamic governance systems that allow the innovation to come through, that allow the invention, that allow all these great things we've been talking about, but also protect societal interests. And that, and you've taken my slide down, Steve, can I have it back again? I'm still conquering the world. He's having problems with Windows Vista. It doesn't matter. Forget it.
Put an S.
The OECD, 30 member countries, plus 10 knocking at the door. And between them, they make up about 80% of the GDP of the planet. It's the rich man's club, but it's also the real big growing nations. So the Chinese, the Indians, the Brazilians, the Russians, all of them are now getting more and more engaged in our work. They're not members, but they're engaged. And we really want to see some global networking of the research, and also we want to see common international governance systems. On security, we've done some modest work in the OECD. We have a site called biosecuritycodes.org, which I encourage you to look up. One of the tests in this will be to see what the write-up in this meeting is on that site. But it tries to act as a kind of an oasis in the desert of information and a plethora of activities we see in biosecurity. And the second thing is last year our council, our member countries, adopted guidelines for biosecurity, particularly focused on large culture collections. And these are guidelines which are now being put in place, not just in our member countries, but also in key accession candidate countries, key countries joining the OECD, like, for example, Russia. So we've done a fair amount of work in this, but we have really only scratched the surface. And the question for us today in our session of biosecurity is, what challenges and opportunities, but what challenges particularly here does synthetic biology bring in biosecurity governance? And we have two speakers today, because I'm going to shut up in a second, I promise. We have two speakers today to give us slightly different but complementary perspectives. And the innovation is we're going to change the order in the agenda. So we're going to start with Michael Imperiali, who's, as well as being Professor of Biology and Immunology at the University of Michigan, you all here will know him well. He serves on NACBB. He also serves on the National Academy's Committee for New Government University Partnership in Science and Security. And after Michael, we'll turn to Nicolas Becker, who is from the office of François Fillon, the Prime Minister of France. And he is in the Secretariat Général de la Défense Nationale, where he's responsible for the bio issues related to non-proliferation and security. So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you, with me, will first of all welcome Michael to the podium. Michael.
Okay, thank you, Ian. So I'd really like to commend the organizers for holding this meeting. It's been really fascinating, and to get this group of people together in the same room, I think that in and of itself really says a lot about this field, which I'm very, very excited about, even though I am not a practitioner of synthetic biology. I'm a virologist, but my interest comes from my service on these committees that Ian just told you about. But what I'm going to talk about today really is my own opinion and is not anything having to do with necessarily with the opinions of the National Science Advisory Board for Biosecurity. So I'm speaking as a private citizen today. So I'd like to tell you about how I view the issue here. And let's just start out with some premises. So first of all, synthetic biology presents risks, but so does all biology. And in fact, so does everything we all do on a day-to-day basis. We're going to walk out the door and cross the street, and that's going to present the risk. So I think we have to acknowledge that there are risks there. Now, the thing with biology is that the consequences of something happening are potentially devastating, right? However, we don't know how to quantify the risks that are associated with synthetic biology, or I would argue with much of biology at all, with maybe a small subset dealing with the types of very dangerous agents that we've heard about already. And so, given this, how do we approach the issue of biosecurity as it relates to synthetic biology? And so the way that I've been thinking about it is that there are four factors that come into play here. First are the technologies themselves. The second are the practitioners of that technology. And then the biology, and biology here, I mean, I should have put a capital B on biology, and I'll come back to what I mean by that in a minute. And then the public, because the public factors into this discussion, because in effect, the public are those that are being put at risk if there are any risks that we need to worry about. So how do we look at these things? So let's think about the technologies. And I'm going to arbitrarily divide synthetic biology into two classes for the purposes of my talk, genome synthesis and engineering, which is pretty much everything else. Okay. So with genome synthesis, as we just heard, it's very easy these days to synthesize the genome of pretty much any virus. And a little bit harder, but one can then derive a virus from those genomes. The technology for synthesizing bacteria is with us. It's not as easy to do right now, but I'm assuming that that's going to move along quite quickly. And then, of course, there's the issue of new organisms, however we want to define those, whether that be mixing and matching parts of existing organisms or maybe trying to develop something completely de novo, and the kinds of things that we just heard about a little bit earlier. And then with respect to engineering, there are design circuits, so the kinds of things that we've heard about during this talk. Molecular shuffling that we haven't heard about too much during this conference, but I think is an important part. And also self-replicating systems, which have been mentioned, but again, we haven't gone into a lot of detail. There are probably other things that fall under this category, but from my simple way of thinking about things, these are the, I think, at least present examples of what the risks might be. Now, with respect to the practitioners, I have four categories here. The first are our traditional scientists, and I mean these are the scientists who work in university labs, government labs, that sort of thing, who are sort of what we would consider the scientists. Then there are other organized groups like iGEM, maybe laboratory courses in colleges or in high schools even. And then the DIY community, I'm not sure what this is, really, to be honest with you, but to paraphrase Stephen Colbert, it's real because they have a website. And then finally, terrorists, but I'm not going to talk about terrorists today because I think what we really are worried about are the risks that are posed by the scientific enterprise itself. And obviously, if there's someone who's really intent on doing harm, that sort of risk is there, and I think we have to just live with that. And then the biology. And the point I want to make about the biology is that to some degree it's predictable, but to a large degree it's unpredictable. And in fact, what excites most of us scientists about biology is the fact that it is unpredictable. And so as we are undertaking our experiments, there are results we're going to get that we did not expect, that don't fit a hypothesis. And they're just as exciting and sometimes even more exciting as the predicted results of our experiments. And there's no way to anticipate those, right? So what are some of the things that are more or less predictable or unpredictable? Well, the design principles for some of the circuits that we're thinking about here. Selection, right? So, we're dealing with biological systems here, and there's always going to be the potential for selection that we did not anticipate as we design these things. Virulence is a very fuzzy term, and we don't understand enough about virulence to be able to point to something without any prior knowledge and say, this is virulent or this is not. And then there are probably other intangibles that I'm not even thinking about right now, but I'm sure that they exist. Because again, we're dealing with a biological system. Okay, so the question is, what do we do? How do we integrate all of these things and come up with something that's going to allow us to advance economic considerations, the science itself, and all of the things that we would really love to do, while making sure that we're not putting people at unnecessary risk. And so I want to talk about some things, some ideas I have. Some are ongoing efforts, and some are just some ideas that I'm going to throw out there for discussion. So first of all, let me just push aside right away equipment and supplies. I think that at this point in time, we can't even consider trying to regulate the equipment and supplies that are needed to do this type of research, because it's mostly low-tech. It's inexpensive, and most of it's widely available. So as far as I'm concerned, I think this is really off the table. And unless there are new technologies that come about where we can start from day one and think about should we be regulating those technologies, right now I think we have to live with the situation in which we already exist. Okay, so what about synthetic genomics? So, one thing that people talk about a lot is screening orders, and in fact, NSAB has made as part of its recommendations in the same report that you just heard about that orders should be screened for the potential match to something that's dangerous. And so what this requires is buy-in from providers, and for the most part, the synthesis community has agreed to do some sort of screening. But I think what we need are better and more uniform screening tools, so everybody's working on the same page in order to be able to determine if something is dangerous or not. Okay. But I'm going to talk a little bit more about this in a minute and come back to it. And then I think we also need rational lists of agents. What's really the most dangerous thing, and what should we really be screening for? And again, that's going to be a little bit difficult to derive, again, because of our understanding of these agents, which is not where we would like it to be in order to really be able to manage risks on a more definite basis, the way that one might manage traditional recombinant DNA research. Now, engineered systems, I think that in terms of circuits, as the predictability improves, the risks will presumably go down. And what I would like to recommend is that we start building a database of what sorts of combinations of things are okay and what sorts perhaps are not okay. And then that will allow us to try to start stratifying things. And so I think at this conference, we've been referring to Asilomar as some sort of god of biological research. But again, after Asilomar, what was done was to start keeping track of, okay, well, this type of experiment really isn't that risky, and so we can put it into a lower category. And I think we can start to try to do the same thing with synthetic biology. Molecular shuffling, to me, presents the highest risk. And the main reason for that is that the potential outcomes are unknown, right? Because pretty much you can get almost anything that you might want to try to select for. Now, I realize there are a lot of technical issues dealing with that, but again, the whole point of shuffling is to try to make a large pool of sequences and then try to pick out the one that one wants. And so, similar to the situation that's posed from a biosafety standpoint, I would say here one wants to be conservative regarding containment and be very prepared for unintended outcomes. So if something bad does come about, you're prepared to contain it and to do the appropriate thing. And then finally, self-replicating systems. I think at present time, the technology is not far enough advanced that we need to worry about these things. But as the technology does begin to advance, it's something that we need to continue to discuss. Okay, people. So this is now going to be the last part of what I want to talk about. So first of all, there's the traditional scientific community. And everyone, especially recently here in the U.S., we're concerned about the so-called insider threat. The threat is certainly real, but it's probably very, very low. Okay, but it's something that we need to think about. And so I think what that means is that we just have to have awareness. Again, we need to be aware if results of the experiments point towards a higher risk of what's being done. And we also just have to be aware of others. So, although we don't want to be sort of spying on each other, we do want to keep an eye out if someone's behavior seems inappropriate. Someone's sticking a vial in their pocket or something like that. Those are the kinds of things we normally don't do in the laboratory. And I think we just have to be more responsible as a scientific community so that if something bad were to happen, at least we can say, hey, we have done our part to minimize the risk. With respect to the other SynBio communities, and again, here I mean, maybe the kids who are working on iGEM, those sorts of things that are not in your traditional laboratories. First of all, I think we need to try to really identify who's out there, especially in this DIY community, and engage them in a dialogue. We need to make them aware that there are potential risks so that they know about it. Now, my fear is that if we are dealing with some high school students, I think we all know when we were teenagers, even though we were told not to engage in certain behaviors, we did it anyway. And so even though I think the intention of these kids who are working on these projects is all very, very good, I think there is a little bit higher risk in terms of that particular community. And then finally, I want to talk about the public, right? So the question is, why do we engage in biological research at all? And to me, there are three reasons. Number one is it's an intellectual pursuit. We like discovery. We like learning about things. The second is that it's fun. And to me, synthetic biology sounds like a lot of fun, and I actually wish I were doing it. But most importantly, probably, is that we engage in this because we want to benefit mankind on many levels, from public health, agriculture, up to increasing our knowledge. So on many different levels, we're really here for the public. And so we work for the public. They pay taxes, they make donations to the private foundations that fund the research, and they're the beneficiaries of the work that we do. And so I think we do have to be engaged in a dialogue with the public about the risks. And so I would say we have to listen to the public and listen to their concerns. You know, we have to educate them. We've talked about some of these issues already in this conference. I think we have to be humble. Someone raised this point yesterday, I think in one of the question and answer sessions, and that's that I think that we can't say that we're the scientific community, we know what's best for you. You know, I think we have to be willing to accept that the public, if they're educated, may not be willing to accept certain risks. And so I think we have to be willing to accept that. We have to maintain openness. Openness builds trust, and people have talked about this already. I don't need to go into it. And again, we need to be honest about the possible risks. So I think we'd be doing ourselves a disservice if we went out there and say, you know, synthetic biology doesn't really present any risks. Don't worry. We're going to be fine. We're going to take care of everything. You know, I think we have to be honest that there might be some risks. However, there are these other risks that you have to put this in the bigger context of when one is thinking about that. And so let me just end on a more positive point. These are the things that I think are the good news. First of all, is that I've been impressed that the synthetic biology community is already engaging in discussions. This is one example of that, but there are many other things with respect to meetings, websites. So one example that we haven't heard about today is the Steve Mora at Berkeley has initiated a portal where if one has questions about whether an experiment might pose a risk, one can post that, submit that question to this portal, and then a group of experts will anonymously discuss it and provide some advice. So these kinds of things are going on already. The science and security communities are talking to each other, which is good, because we really do need to educate each other, as was mentioned either earlier today or yesterday. It's great that there's an ongoing international dialogue, because obviously it doesn't make sense to have regulations or rules in one country and not in another country, because we really must think of ourselves as a global community. I'm preaching to the choir here, obviously. And then finally, the government actions that have been taken, at least the ones that I'm aware of, and I'm mostly aware of those in the U.S., have been measured, which is good, because I think that it shows that the governments realize the importance of not impeding the research as it moves forward. And so I will end there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michael, and I'm glad to hear that you sound like you've given up bad behavior. You talked about being badly behaved when you're a teenager. You must tell me the secret of the net. And you've given us a perfect segue from government action into what's happening in France. So without further ado, Nicolas, the floor is yours.
So thank you very much to give me the opportunity to be here today with you. So I work for Secretariat General de Défense Nationale. It's dependent from the Prime Minister's office, and we are in charge to coordinate all issues in relation with security and defense. So we are looking for emerging domains, and we have initiated an interministerial cogitation about synthetic biology. So I would like to present you the first analysis results and the approach for synthetic biology related biosecurity. So my talk will focus only on biosecurity, so I would like just to remind quickly the definition from OECD, so the co-organizer of this meeting. Biosecurity is intended to deter or detect the loss or theft of dangerous biological materials for illicit or malicious purposes. So who can use this for malicious purposes? It could be from a range scale from individuals, crime organization, terrorism, and we couldn't exclude a country with a biological program. So the general tools to improve biosecurity are regulation, recommendation, and sensitization. So we to talk about biosecurity, we need to identify the potential risk. So currently the potential risks are in the biological domains with de novo synthesis of CNOR biological threat agents and with de novo synthesis of new biological agents. So the major concern is about the de novo synthesis of non-biological agents because we have a lot of regulation to control listed biological threat agents, and synthetic biology can offer new opportunity, new way of synthesis to create these agents to escape to this control. Another concern is about de novo synthesis of new biological threat agents, more exactly about modification of known agents to improve eventually the biological property about, for example, pathogenicity or about resistance in environments. So we can imagine other applications with other potential risks. For example, so we're just giving two examples. We can have de novo synthesis of known chemical threat precursors when you have a lot of regulation to control the precursor of chemical biowarfare agents. And if we can, to pursue with imagination, we can imagine also some potential risks with hybrid organisms with nanotechnology. But it's difficult to identify all the potential risks open with synthetic biology. So a lot of recommendation has been published for governmental authorities to improve biosecurity. So we can... The origin of this recommendation are academies of science. So the French Academy of Science has not published a specific report about synthetic biology, but a report on biological threats, biosecurity, and scientific responsibility. We can also name national advisory boards, and some specific studies, like studies from the Six Framework Program, as it was presented previously in the NEST program, more exactly. So we have here some selected recommendations that we have analyzed in the French government. So we can just mention adapted regulation to limit malicious application, control of gene synthesis, guidelines, harmonization and code of conduct, sensitization, education and training, and the last but not the least, committee to check and control synthetic biology research. So the first recommendation was about adapted regulation to limit malicious application. So we are looking for, and we have an existing frame which covers partially the risk in terms of biosecurity. So we have international regulation with United Nations resolutions, the Chemical Weapons Convention and the Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention, which normally limit the risk for development of new agents. We have also European regulation for export control. So these regulations are supranational and are automatically in place in all European countries. This control exploitation, the name exactly in Europe is regulation number 1334/2000, which requires dual use items, including software and technology, to be subject to effective control when they are exported from the community. So the list of biological and chemical items is determined by the Australia group. European for regulation for biological risk at work is more for biosafety, but is involved as well in biosecurity, which can be complemented with national regulation. And we have in France, but we are not a lot, we can find in a lot of countries, some specific regulation for biosecurity to control all or part, and by part it's included DNA synthesis, DNA sequences of listed microorganisms or toxins. For all these, we cannot assume that all this reglementation can cover all the biosecurity for the potential risk of synthetic biology. So this work is still in progress, and we continue to pursue the analysis. But to be sure that it could be completely covered, we need to looking for to identify all the potential risk to check if it's not controlled with the actual with the current reglementation. So the second recommendation was about control of DNA synthesis. So we have two approaches. The first is about control of DNA synthesis. So we're looking for initiation from some work initiated, for example, by EISB about the control of DNA synthesis, but it's looking very difficult to control all the DNA synthesizers in all research laboratories. Moreover, we have an uncommon use in research laboratories of control, so it could be very difficult to take in place. Moreover, we need appropriate databases, so I know that a lot of people work in this way, but currently the database is not enough for us, and to be very, very effective, we need an international control. It's not the case because for the companies, the industry, so that's true that you have international consortium, but it's not with all of them. So the second approach is this approach is prioritized in France. It's about sensitization of gene synthesis industries. So it's result from a group analysis group from Australia group, with communication to industries of an illustrated list of indicators to identify suspicious orders of synthetic nucleic acid sequences, and to agreement with some national point of contact in case of suspicious order. So I know that in US, that the same kind of approach has been in place. So just to remind, because it's very important, we are not against control of DNA synthesis. It could be a good approach, but currently is not appropriate. We have not all the appropriate tools. And it's very important that for the control DNA synthesis must be international to be effective. It's very, very important for us. So another recommendation is about sensitization of scientific community. So for France, it's very important. It may be the best way, like it was reported by French Science Academy. We think that in biosecurity is the responsibility of government, but as well of scientific community. So it's why we have a sensitization program by security civil servant in each research institution. We have in place as well conference by governmental agency from health or feeding. We have seminar from the Internal Information Central Direction. We try to explain the risk and to give some example, which usually for scientific people are receptive and accept when we explain them the risk. We have also a program of education with some specific university degrees in biosecurity. In fact, it's not exactly only in biosecurity, but in biosafety and biosecurity. So we have one university degree in place in Lille in the north of France. And we have probably in the future some national forum to sensitize the scientific community. So sensitization of scientific community is considered in a very, very important approach to improve biosecurity concern of scientists. So the last recommendation was about monitoring and control committee for synthetic biology research. So we are not really completely analyzed this proposition, but we are sure of one point, that such committee must be really international and it must be in framework of United Nations if we want to be effective, and maybe it could be taken in charge by the Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention. So it's why we have, and we are not alone in this way, some national advisory scientific committee on emergent scientific fields. So it was led by the French Academy of Sciences. It was not in place currently, but it's in progress. And it's not restricted to synthetic biology, but for all emerging scientific fields. So in summary, I would just like to remind that synthetic biology provides powerful application, including biodefense. So it's very important we are very interested by these new fields. And we remind as well that regulation without discrimination could handicap research. So we are conscious that we need to maybe to control and regulated these new fields, but with adapted regulation if we need it, and to take care about fundamental research of in laboratory. So biosecurity can be improved by sensitization of scientific community. As you can understand, there is an important way that we have identified. So tools for education or training are welcome to complement this work. You have control of suspicious order for gene synthesis industries is supported. So it is in progress in France. It's more in first step. It's probably the best approach comparatively to the control of DNA sequences, currently. At the moment, and analysis of biorisk induced by synthetic biology is still ongoing. So we continue this work. It was in the middle step, and guidelines of good practices to improve biosecurity of synthetic biology are also welcome. So, thank you very much for your attention.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Nicolas. And I think you nicely summarized some of the key issues that we might fire off some discussion on. And before I turn the floor open to the questioners, let me just pose three things that I've heard. And the first one is to ask simply a question: what's different about synthetic biology? And the thing that strikes me from the conversations we've had is the individuals, the types of people, the communities that are involved here. Because quintessentially, we're talking about trying to involve the bright young future generations. We're involving engineers as well as scientists who have very different perspectives on some of these risks. The kind of the speed and the ability of users, the garagist, the biohacker to work here is something which is certainly, from my experience in the biosciences, rather different. And the second question that I want to throw out on the table is one about infrastructures. And I think both of you mentioned that you wanted to see some better guidance, some better tools available for issues such as looking at synthesized sequences. I'm a mushroom. I kept in the dark and they feed me bullshit. And then the third thing is who needs to be doing what. So I want to just put these on the table, leave you to ponder them, and in the meantime throw the floor open to questioners. And I know that one of the targets for your comments, Nicolas, was a biological and toxic weapons convention chap. So I think we'll start with Piers.
I was going to thank both speakers for a fantastic set of presentations and point out that it looks like I might get a come and hang around with you guys at future meetings if some of those recommendations came true. I'd like to start off by picking up on the point about the DIY bio community, to point out that they do have a safety and security working group, that myself and other people in the room are on that group, and that those channels of communication are beginning to be open, that is something that some of the leading figures in that community are particularly concerned about resolving, so that there is some good news there. But if you'll indulge me, I had some thoughts, feedbacks and questions on what we've just heard. I think first of all, I would start off by saying, yeah, I absolutely believe the first message out of our mouths when we talk about security is to say how good this community is on that issue. That, you know, it really is the case study of engagement and community-led engagement on security issues. If we can only do this with other biological science disciplines, my job would be much easier. Secondly, I've listened very carefully to the words that are used in association with security frameworks, and I think that we're still missing a trick here. I don't think these frameworks should allow beneficial applications. I think they should enable beneficial applications. I want to see what is eventually put in place as the door that you go through to get to Randy's fund from yesterday. I think that's what it is. This is part of a much better process. And I think the relationship between the security community and the synthetic biology community is more than just a relationship. It's more than just communicating. I think that both fields will dramatically alter each other. That synthetic biology will drastically impact the security field, because it's going to, if the potential comes true in a couple of decades' time, as we've heard, the really big stuff, it's going to blow traditional approaches to arms control out of the water. And equally, if you flip it round and do it the other way round, that I think we've heard exactly the right thing, that security is a part of doing biology in the 21st century. Good biology is safe, secure, and beneficial biology. And that requires quite a big shift in thinking amongst how you pursue biology. And that leads me to a recommendation that both security and the synthetic biology communities are going to have to go through a fairly big shift, and that's going to require new tools and approaches. And finally, I think we need to start looking at reframing this issue from a negative to a positive. This is the question is, we're not asking synthetic biologists, shouldn't be, are you part of the problem? Are you doing something that's wrong? It's a question of, are you part of the solution? How are you helping us prevent others, not you, others, from doing something wrong? So my five things are: acknowledge the work, ensure security frameworks enable, not restrict, recognize it's a two-way relationship that'll have a big impact in both directions, actively pursue new tools and approaches, and reframe the issue. Thanks.
I love these points, Piers. I love in particular that point about enabling. I'm going to take a few points, and I'd encourage people to not just ask questions, but as Piers has done, you know, voice opinions. We want a discussion, so off we go.
I actually want to come back to the biohacking issue, and I'm still trying to get a sense of whether this is really a myth or a speculation, or whether it's a very real concern. When I look at this, I mean, there are a couple of things which I think are very clear. One is, we know that people that are either young in years or young at heart like to do disruptive things. You look at the chemistry community. I was dying to ask how many people here who started off as chemists experimented with explosives as kids. I'm not going to ask that. But certainly most people will know of people that have messed around with high energetic systems as kids. We also know, obviously, about the computer virus community, where people will write things just because they can, not because they have bad intentions, just because they're flexing their muscles. The question is that tendency to try and flex muscles like that actually going to become a reality within the fringes of the biohacker community? And I'm not talking about the organized biohacker community that are going to be responsible, they're going to adhere to some sort of code, but the people at the fringes of that community that decide they can do something and they want to see how far they can push it. Is this something that can really happen, or are we just making myths for ourselves?
Another great question, Suthian.
Well, continuing from the two previous questions, I would like to draw some comparison between the information communication technology and the symbiotechnology, nanotechnology, etc. We have the information technology transform our productivity or system and completely made us dependent for our economic benefit on the information technology, and therefore the information hackers created economic horror in doing some hacking. Now, I'm not worried whether it is a myth or a reality. This technology, unlike nuclear technology, is not dependent on the equipment. It's purely knowledge dependent. And science being democratic and open and transparent, the knowledge is freely available. If it goes into the misusing hands, how are we going to prevent it? All that I heard today is sensitizing the scientific community and self-regulating. I don't think that is a huge issue here. Coming from a health department, I'm worried about health security if this is misused in some way or the other. Where is the equivalent of a firewall that we use in the information technology? Where is a biological firewall? Is someone looking at it? Is it possible to build that firewall simultaneously as we build a whole new system of new synthesis, new synthetic biology? And I think it's time to start thinking in those lines as well, because health security is where this will start, where this will be affected, leading to economic insecurity. That's my comment.
Thank you. We'll take one more before I invite answers.
Thank you. I'd like to argue that the security connected issues to synthetic biology for the next 10 years is going to be zero or close to zero because of the following. Virulence factors, as we know now from the result of research for 20 years, are the result of an intimate evolutionary intimacy between the host and the virulence and the agent that expresses the virulence. So the virulence factors that are the worst probably have been already developed by nature. They are out there, and nature has played with all possible combinations of them along evolution. So I have serious doubts that even the smartest engineer, the smartest biologist, can come up with something that is more pathogenic than the agents that we have out there. So basically, I think that the security issues connected to the production of virulent or more virulent bacteria or more virulent agents at this point are going to be very, very limited.
Okay, so let's just pause on, I think there's kind of four key points come out there from these questions. One, we need to reshape the debate into security, enabling innovation, recognize the interdependence between the innovators and the security community in looking at these issues. Secondly, well, there's a fair degree of responsibility in the DIY hackers, but will that responsibility be held at the margins? Thirdly, do we have to and can we build a firewall, for example, for health security? And fourthly, well, maybe we don't have to do it right now. Maybe we've got some time. Michael, do you want to start by commenting?
Okay. So first, I completely agree with Pierce. And as I said, I think that discussion, at least here in the U.S., is occurring on many different levels. And so, my sense is that it's also occurring outside the U.S. So I think you're absolutely right. With respect to the biohacker situation, I guess my feeling is that if someone is really intent on doing harm, you know, they're going to find a way to do it. You can put up an impediment here, you can put up an impediment here. And depending on how large of a firewall one can build, you might be able to more or less stop more people. But I'm not sure you can ever really control everyone. That's just not going to happen. And so then the question becomes, what's the bigger risk? Someone doing biohacking or someone driving a car bomb up to a building or things like that? And again, since it's very hard to quantify these risks, I don't know how to wrap my arms around that question. So, but I guess my bottom line is that we're never going to be able to stop everyone from doing something bad. And then I actually would dispute the last comment that nature has already sort of sampled the entire set of possible combinations that can lead to virulence. I don't think that's the case. I think if that were the case, most viruses would infect any species that they want because they'd have more places to replicate. That's just one very simplistic view of it. So I think there are a lot of things out there that we don't know. We don't understand virulence. There are many, many ways to accomplish virulence. It is dependent upon a clear sort of choreographed interaction between the pathogen and the host, but I disagree that there are not more virulent things that are potentially out there that nature has not yet found.
Thanks, Michael. Nicola.
Yeah, just some compliment about biohackers. So about biohackers, we have not in France currently, but it's why we recommend the control of suspicious orders for control from the DNA gene synthesis industries, and normally to check that no individual guys can order some DNA sequences to try to make biohacking. So, and I think that the concern about biohacking is more about biosafety than about biosecurity. It's my mind. To come back about United Nations, so it was just given an example. Maybe I'd use not appropriate terms. It was just given an example like it was existing from a chemical Weapon Convention, we had to create an organism which international authority to control. So if you need to control in the future, I mean you should be by United Nations independent organism. So it's why I mentioned this way. So, and to finish about with infrastructure, so that's true, that is very something interesting, and we're looking forward to maybe to limit access in future about this this place.
Okay, thank you, guys. And I'm going to take 5 minutes off your coffee break. I'm sorry about this, because I want one more round. Paul.
Hi, Ian. I am here, and I'm not going to talk about society. although I'm very happy to notice that several people are at least a little nervous about it, which they never were before. Okay, a few points. There's a distinction between risk and danger, which I think is worth drawing. Most of what you've said are about dangers. Risks are something that are quantified in a series. So we don't know, as you've said, what the risks actually are because we haven't encountered any. So it's tricky to look at the currently existing risk assessment and risk analysis technologies because we're in probably in a different situation. So we have a topology of danger. We know very little about risk. So that's point one. Point two, something that I've encountered with many biologists, there's a simple distinction, but one that seems to be missed, between terror and warfare. The response that it's very hard to do anything with anthrax or the virulence thing, and I agree with you about virulence, is of course important. But all you need to have had is that H1N1, which could have killed nobody, came out of some lab, and you would have dramatic consequences, even if no one was actually harmed. So it's not going to cause amount of loss of life is one thing, but anything synthetic that starts something else, set of ramifications, is going to have a lot of effect. And then finally, I think the third point is preparedness. That is to say, I think we would all agree, whether it's rambunctious, overly testosterone youth of unknown genders or not, once something happens, then what? And in my experience, not enough attention has been paid to that. Because I fully agree with Michael that you can't control everything, and we don't want to live in a society where you can control everything. You hear society? So the question is, once something happens, then what? And that's what I think we need to pay more attention to, in addition to everything else that you've been saying.
I knew we'd convert you back to society. Next question.
Okay. This session actually has something in common with many of the previous sessions. We're talking about a technology and a set of methods that have not had immediate effect, but the effects are coming. So as was true in our discussion of intellectual property issues, was true in our discussion of environmental effects, so too with reference to security, we're not talking about immediate 2, 3, 4, 5-term effects. It's longer term. That said, if we look to the effects of synthetic biology as distinct from ordinary, good old-fashioned recombinant DNA work, okay, and look to the effects on both offense and defense over the longer term, I think that we have to actually take this quite seriously. We've had an emphasis on diffusion, which has been entirely appropriate, because de-skilling and access of a larger group of people to the methods is part of what's intrinsic to synthetic biology. But at the same time, there are other potential effects of synthetic biology that we may want to be looking at in terms of offense and defense. Specifically, if, thinking back to Drew's presentation at the very outset, you have a set of methods that allow more reliable, more rapid, lower cost, again, more rapid and more precise methods for redesign that may have both offensive and defensive implications. On the defensive side, good news, there's the possibility of developing countermeasures not just to artificial but to natural problems more quickly. The revolution in medicine that we were discussing earlier should be part of a discussion of defense and security. On offense, the potential for designing more discriminating. You know, we talk about Ebola or smallpox, but there's also the potential that more discriminating biological weapons may be developed, and that may be actually the greater threat, because they may be more usable by states. You put that on top of the hackers longer term, and we need to be more careful in our characterization of offense and defense, and then take advantage of the time that we have now to do appropriate actions to emphasize the defense and perhaps weaken the offensive implications.
Okay, one more.
I think the first speaker rightly mentioned that all these equipment are easily available, cheap, and widely available. And these are the right combination for people with wrong intentions. As many sites of Al-Qaeda and Lashkar-e-Taiba I scan, I know Tora Bora has laboratories, and they actually constantly look for those types of people. So as a scientific community, we have to be right all the time, and these people don't have to be right one single time. So I think my recommendation to this community would be not only to find ways to look for these types of synthetic biology derivatives, but also countermeasures, such as the firewall, which was mentioned by the previous person who posed the question from Canada. So I think we need to look at the measures and countermeasures, which is rightly pointed out.
Okay, and then the last question before.
This is really just a comment, and it relates to a point that Michael made. I just wanted to correct, let's say, a potential misconception in relation to iGEM. With iGEM, we don't have 1,100 students kind of running around doing these projects. It's really important to understand that the iGEM teams work with faculty in well-regulated laboratories within, you know, well-known universities. And 3 weeks ago at Imperial College, we ran the European Teach the Teachers meeting with Randy and his colleagues. And all the people that attended that meeting, which about 60 of them, you know, are all very well-known or well-known research scientists who are, you know, regulated by the regulations of their various countries, etc. So I think it's really important that, you know, make the point that as far as iGEM projects are concerned, these are all done within highly regulated laboratories and under the supervision of, you know, research faculty that really understand what they're doing.
Thank you for that, Dick. And so I think the key points there are, and there's some very difficult ones in the last kind of minute or two of the session, how do we deal with that which is unpredictable, not just unpredicted? How do we deal with different tolerances of risk depending on the origin of an event? How do we create preparedness and then a response for an unusual but potentially very harmful event? And can we spend some time thinking a little bit about the pros and the cons of the different characteristics of synthetic biology in a more sophisticated way than it's black or white? So, Michael, would you want to start?
Okay, first, let me apologize if I came across as thinking that iGEM was this unregulated group of kids just running around willy-nilly, because I realize that's not the case. With respect to the response, I think that's a very, very important issue, and I would argue that you know, the public health response can be thought of as another one of these dual-use issues that we talk about all the time, in that the same system that allows us to respond to naturally occurring events would also allow us to hopefully respond to any kind of event that may come out of a laboratory or be man-made. And so I think it's very important that we invest in the public health response for two reasons. Even if nothing were ever to happen out of a laboratory, we have to have that public health response in place. I wanted to come back to this issue of thinking long-term versus short-term. You know, I'm not sure that all of the issues are really long-term, because right now, someone, I think, with a little bit of money and wherewithal could buy all of the oligos that they need to construct a select agent. The synthesis of oligos is not being screened at all, and they could try to do that. And that could be done today. And, it took Eckhard Wimmer, I don't know how long, but the technology is a lot more robust right now. And so I think we do have to be thinking short-term as well as long-term.
So really quickly, briefly. So it was like it said, the difficulty for us is that the long-term risk is potential is not clear. So it's how we can try to regulate something that we cannot really define now. So it's really the best difficulty and the best challenge for us.
Well, thank you very much. To have the last word in this session, the four messages I take away are think about synthetic biology and security as being things where security is a positive framework condition for innovation, and make sure that it is. Secondly, acknowledge that we have a very responsible, very engaged community here on this set of issues, and we should congratulate ourselves for that. Thirdly, there's certainly some short-term imperatives, and I think the biggest short-term imperative that I've heard is the availability of screening tools which can be used and exchanged internationally, so that there's a common playing field for that. But nevertheless, fourthly, that there are some longer-term issues that we do have some time to think about, although complacency would not be rewarded. Ladies and gentlemen, I think you've earned your coffee. Please join me in thanking the speakers.